On the line now, I have Michelle Murphy, social policy analyst with Social Justice Ireland. Good afternoon, Michelle. How are you? Good to talk to you.
Good afternoon, Noel. I'm very well.
Okay, we're going to talk about the situation things again. I'm talking to a lot of people, but the first question I want to ask, I was just wondering, the census that has come, the results of the census, do you feel it has any impact? Does it give you any information?
Well, I haven't looked through it fully, but I suppose what's interesting is you can see the population changes in, you know, people are migrating to more urban areas, and you've a lot of counties where they've had net emigration, take Donegal, for example, Mayo and Sligo. And at the same time, I suppose what you also see is, you know, there are a number of, quite a number of vacant dwellings, but then when you actually, and you know, this is brought up a lot in terms of the housing crisis, but when you look at where they are, you know, the majority of them are in Leitrim, or, you know, places that don't have high lists of people on the social housing waiting list. So it gives us some very interesting insights into changes that are happening. I suppose what's unfortunate is, you know, people just grab onto the number of vacant dwellings without actually drilling down into looking exactly where are these dwellings in the first place. And, you know, if they're not in the area where there's a social housing need, then, you know, you need to look beyond it. But, I mean, they are, the sort of preliminary results are actually very, very, very interesting. And so it will be interesting in the coming months, you know, just to see the reports, the specifics.
And you break them down, yeah. I suppose, for me, like, I do talk to every week to the North County Leader. We always talked about the development and the involvement of the Fingal area, and that's the highest populated area. It's, the growth was enormous. Of course, employment has grown as well here, so I suppose that's part of the reason of the growth and the housing, of course, as well. So I suppose all that combined is responsible for that.
Yeah, and it, you know, it did see the biggest increase, so, you know, which is positive as well. You know, it's good to see some positive things coming out of the Senate. You know, after the past few years, you know, when there's been a lot of sort of doom and gloom, it's good to see that there are some positives there.
Well, I'm afraid we're going to stick with the doom and gloom, because talking around to a lot of people when I knew I was going to be talking, just to get a little vox pop in my head of the way people are thinking. And all you can hear is abeyance, abeyance, abeyance. What's this government do? Every time they do something, they have to set up a commission, set up a some kind of investigative thing, or we'd be looking at that down the road, especially with the housing problem. And one other thing that came up, for instance, was about all the taxes coming in, all the charges coming in. And of course the social welfare, the wages, and then of course the pension mainly. Like, you're getting all the charges, no increases. These are the type of things people are talking about. So that's part of your, that's coming in as part of your briefing as well that you put forward.
Yeah, so we published our poverty briefing last week, and we actually, we're publishing budget choices on Monday, so we'll have that on our website on Monday. And, you know, the things you talk about are the things that are in here. You know, the fact that people on, you know, welfare rates, fixed income, so the actual real value of it has gone down significantly over the past number of years. It's actually, for most people, it's 30 euros below the poverty line. You mentioned the pensions. There was an increase last year, but, you know, it was minimal. The same with the living alone allowance. So those people on fixed incomes, they're not doing well at all. And we actually have 100,000 more people now living in poverty than we did at the beginning of the recession. And what you have is 57% of those people actually aren't connected to the labour market. So, you know, they're pensioners, they're students, there are a significant number of people in caring roles, or people with a disability, for example. So, you know, all this talk about making work pay and, you know, jobs are the answer to everything. Well, they're not for this group of people, because they're not connected to the labour market in any way. And it's, like you said there, you know, people on pensions and stuff, they're really feeling the squeeze, because even though it has been increased slightly, the real value has fallen so much over time. So that's what people are feeling. And, you know, it should, it's not as if this problem cannot be solved. It can be solved if there was some political commitment around it. And one of the things we will be calling for is that government should set a goal of eliminating poverty in this Dáil term. And secondly, that in the coming budget, that core welfare rates should be increased by €6.50 a week. And, you know, in the meantime, as over time, while you're trying to get the welfare rates up to the poverty line, you need to benchmark your social welfare payments, provide adequate payments for children, adopt the living wage, for example, make tax credits refundable, introduce a universal state pension at the contributory rate. all of these sorts of things are policies that need to be implemented if you are serious about dealing mm-hmm. with poverty and eliminating it.
Yeah, I think we're talking about a stable government, but at the moment, like, all that they're talking about is themselves. And as I say, yeah. People can notice these things and they're saying, well, I mean, how long is it going to last? I have to say, he's going to be very insulted. I can't remember his name at the moment, but the ex-Prime Minister of England.
Oh, David Cameron.
David Cameron, yeah. He actually said something about his tenure when he was there yesterday. And, a political commentator was commentating on him. He said one of the great things he did was that when he put someone into a job, he left them there for a few years because he felt it takes at least 2 years to get the feel of the job. Mm-hmm. And then they know what they're doing then. So you leave them there. That's not the case here. And maybe that's a part of the problem.
I think it could be as well. You know, every 2 years there seems to be a reshuffle, you know, mm-hmm. which is upheaval both for the civil servants because there's a new minister, and then the new ministers or the ministers move have to, you know, get to grips with a new brief. They're almost starting from scratch again. So work that maybe was in train and progressing is paused until a new person comes in place and looking at, you know, what their priorities are. So, I mean, it's not conducive to sort of long-term or medium-term policy outcomes. It's really just, I suppose, a political instrument mm-hmm. more than anything. It's certainly not a policy instrument.
Yeah, especially, Michelle, when you think of the HSE. I mean, that's everyone's calling it the poison chalice, but someone's in it for a year. It's impossible. I mean, you'd want someone, as Cameron said himself, someone to be in there at least 5 years to get a good hold on things, and even to get which direction to take for some kind of remedial success, I imagine.
Oh, absolutely, because you can see the first thing the new minister did, Mr. Harris, when he came in, is he's committed to publish a long-term budget for the health service, but also to commit to setting up the Oireachtas Committee to develop a 10-year strategy or 10-year plan for health. But obviously, part of that is going to have to acknowledge that it's certainly going to take more than 1 or 2 years to get to grips with everything that's happening in the health sector. Mm-hmm. And so what they really need to look at, and what I would hope this Oireachtas Committee would also look at, is, you know, if you're going to put in place and there's going to be a consensus agreement about the direction of the health service, how we're going to fund it and all the rest, then you have to put in place the policy instruments to deliver that, regardless of which minister is in place, because if you're going to switch ministers every 2 years, it's incredibly disruptive, and mm-hmm. you're not going to get the outcomes that, you know, the consensus outcomes that should be delivered from that 10-year plan. So that's something that you'd imagine that committee will be looking at.
Okay, now on Monday you're saying that you're going to be publishing your budget. Mm-hmm. That's passed on to the government, and of course they have the yeah. one coming up, and before things mm-hmm. take any sort of veering of the way things, because we don't know where things are going to go with Brexit now, but at least seeing yeah. for this budget things are not going to change. Can you give me an outline of it's like the briefing that you're given me now? Did he pay much attention to these things when you give them to you? I know I've asked you that before.
Well, you would hope so, and you'd hope so this time around, because it is a minority government, so they are reliant mm-hmm. on other people for support. And I suppose the Oireachtas Committees in this regard, in terms of the budget now, will have a lot more say. So every member, it won't just be members of government or government parties, it will be every member of the Dáil actually will have a lot more influence in terms of how resources are allocated and what policies are implemented. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll be sending, once it's launched on Monday, we'll be sending it to everyone, and we've sent the policy briefing on poverty, obviously, to every member of the Oireachtas as well, because so what we're trying to ensure is that they make their decisions based on, you know, real evidence and information. And, you know, what we pointed out in the poverty briefing is, you know, you still have 751,000 people in this country who are living in poverty, and nearly 1 in 5 children are living in households with incomes below the poverty line. And how is that acceptable? In prior to, you know, this week, we had every minister was, you know, declaring that it was great that we had, you know, 6-7% growth rate. But then all of a sudden, when it becomes 26%, you know, we can't rely on that figure at all. But 2 weeks ago, we were relying on it. So you can't have, you know, you can't claim that there's recovery and that we're the fastest growing country in the EU and we should be giving a tax incentives to attract mm-hmm. foreign direct investment and multinationals, and at the same time you've nearly 230,000 children living in poverty. You know, if regard, even if you have a growth rate of 3% or 4%, you can still solve this problem. Mm-hmm. You know, all it takes is political commitment, but there doesn't seem to be any political commitment there. But so it's an issue that we're trying to put on the agenda, and we will continue to put on the agenda for this budget and for coming budgets.
Yeah, because a lot of people, as I say, with the Vox Pop, people, everything that time to question and something, everything is put in abeyance, and they're using the excuse. I mean, they're having a break now for 2 months, for God's sake.
I know.
It's frustrating. You can hear the frustration from the people that come through me. And, you know, that they're sort of saying that one problem is causing the other. Like, it's a catch-22 for them, that prices and houses going up and all this.
That's what, you know, we've been saying for a long time, and that's actually what we said in our programme for government briefings and everything, that you can't focus on just economic issues. You know, that's what has caused the current mess. A sole focus on economic issues, and you just assume once you solve that, the social issues will be resolved, and they won't. So you have to do everything together. So you have to provide decent services, decent infrastructure, so things like housing, education, healthcare, because without them, you're not going to have your thriving economy. You're not going to have the good education system that produces, you know, the really well-educated workers that these companies want. Mm-hmm. You need a decent transport system. That requires investment. You also need to have good governance. So, you know, examining your policies, are they having the required impact or not? And if they're not having the required impact, how do you change it? Then how do you pay for these things? You know, you need to generate the revenue required to give people the services that they expect. Yet there's no acknowledgement of that at all. And if you look at sort of poverty in Ireland, the social welfare system actually does a really good job in terms of alleviating it, because before social welfare payments kick in, 49% of the population in this country would be living in poverty. That would, which means they would have an income below the poverty line. Once social welfare transfers kick in, it reduces that to 16%.
Well, can I ask ask you one question? Yeah. Since you're talking about the social welfare, what do you mean about the stop the discrimination against certain groups on an arbitrary basis, such as age?
So, for what I'm really talking about there is young people. You know, the young people under 26, and then under, you know, their unemployment payments were reduced significantly. And all the talk pre-budget, and, you know, even in the programme for government, there's talk about, you know, increasing certain payments, but certainly not those ones. And yet those young people have more or less been abandoned, you know. And they're supposed to survive on a very low income and then go and take up internship programs. And how are they supposed to do that? And they've, you know, the government have been criticised by the European, not the council, but an arm of the European Union regarding this already. Mm. They were criticised last year. So, you know, it's why you're discriminating on the basis of age, but for what reason?
Well, you know that they're going to say that's to incentivise them to work.
Yeah, well, to do what, you know, you still, if you look at, drill down into the unemployment figures.
But you not realise, Michelle, we have a recovery now. That's just lots.
Well, so they say.
That's me being cynical,
depending on where you are, you certainly don't. If you step, you know, some parts of Dublin are certainly feeling recovery, other parts certainly aren't. Some towns in Ireland, you know, they're on their knees, small towns in Ireland. Other small towns, you know, who can attract tourists and things are doing fairly okay, but the smaller towns and certainly parts of Dublin and other areas, particularly, they're not. They never felt the recovery. Most of them never felt the Celtic Tiger in the first place. So, you know, we still haven't resolved the really unequal distribution of direct income in this country. That's before social welfare kicks in. We've never done anything to resolve that. So, what we're saying is, you know, this didn't just happen overnight. This has been going on for the past 20, 30 years, so something needs to be done to resolve it. Because when you look back at when, for example, the old age pension was increased and social welfare payments were increased, poverty levels dropped dramatically. So, you know, if you want to eliminate poverty, it's not just creating jobs. You need to look at social welfare payments and how you ensure people have adequate social welfare payments and adequate services.
Okay, well, we stay on the social welfare thing, because the bugbear of mine, and I hear people talking about it all the time, that it's so obvious that, especially with the housing crisis now, but it's been going on for years and years and years, where I heard one person describing it as saying they're paying kids to leave home. That's what they're doing now. And it's a system where if you've got a working class couple living in a council house, and they have say one child. He reaches the age where he can go out to work, college, wherever he wants to do. But the minute he reaches that age, the house, obviously the rent and all that, is means tested by the social welfare, and so is his income, and so is the parents' income, and he can drop down to £5 a week because he's living at home and his parents have not too bad jobs.
Yeah.
So, okay, what you do is leave home, we give you rent allowance, we give you our full dole, and that's it. Now, this is where it was, and the dole is not great for young people now, as you pointed out, but at the time, it wasn't, it's never great, but to be honest, but do you understand what I'm saying now, that the pain...
Yeah, but now, you know, what they're doing is... how are those people supposed to find accommodation? You know, the cost of accommodation is so high. So it's like you say, there's no sort of foresight looking at even another thing, especially for people, someone with a family who was perhaps previously on welfare and they gain employment, then the majority of people don't walk into a really high paid job.
Mm-hmm.
So they look at taking up the employment, and suddenly they realise, for example, if you have children, you're going to lose your medical cards, your rent supplement, everything. Mm-hmm. And yet you want to take up that job. There's no consideration that benefits need to be tapered, you know, that you need to give someone time to get into the job, to readjust, and then over time you taper those benefits. You don't just take everything away immediately. You know, so we really need to reform the welfare system because, you know, it's not designed for the time we're living in, you know, and most people now, they're not in full-time permanent jobs, especially mm-hmm. young people. They're moving in and out of either zero-hour contracts or flexible contracts, you know, a couple of months here or there, or rolling contracts. So, you know, they don't really have security. So we really need to reform the system itself.
Mm-hmm. And I suppose I'm not going to go into any of it at all, but I imagine the impact on people in poverty as well, that the controversy with all the charity, with the particular charity, but charities above board, that's going to obviously have an impact on people who are on social welfare or who have bad, not great jobs, and just living on the poverty line, if not below it. So this is another whammy for them as well, surely.
It is, because, you know, a lot of services in this country, they're provided by the community and voluntary sector,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the state doesn't necessarily, you know, doesn't want to take responsibility for providing. So a lot of services that those people rely on, you know, maybe the community creches, after-school projects, loads of different projects, you know, they're provided by the community and voluntary sector, by groups with charitable status who rely, you know, on donations to... as well as, you know, other funds, but the donations
services,
are part of their funding. And, you know, the impact that that's going to have on those small groups is huge, you know, as a result of the actions of, you know, what looks like one individual anyway in this organisation, but the impact that that's going to have on the sector is enormous. As you said, the knock-on impact on people.
Yeah, as I always used to say here when I'd be talking about things like that or talking to people that do volunteer work, that the country would collapse because per capita we're the most generous in the world, and we're also with our time, not just with money, but our time for volunteering, and without the services of people that give their time and money, the country would collapse because it's because of the negligence of the services of the government can't provide or don't provide.
Absolutely, like the number of hours that people give, and that's basic. The state is getting that for nothing. You know, if you have to go and deliver and pay for all of that, it would cost you a significant amount of money. The same is true for carers. They provide, I think it's something like 600 million hours a year, mm-hmm. caring hours.
Okay.
You know, for nothing.
Okay, well, if people want to read this latest briefing, they can look up the website, obviously, Michelle, and for the budget, coming up Monday.
.ie, and the poverty briefing is up there now, and the budget briefing will be up there on Monday at 11.
Okay. I always ask you, I know that, but just trying to cheer myself up, be optimistic for the future, that something might be done, and they start listening to something like Social Justice Ireland.
I think so. I would hope so. I think, you know, people are starting to realise that, you know, it's not just here. Like, all over Europe, people are just being left behind as a result of fiscal policy. And I think finally, hopefully, people might be waking up to the fact that you can't leave people behind. You have to bring them with you. And what did people say they wanted in the election? They wanted decent public services,
mm-hmm.
you know, and decent public infrastructure. And more and more groups are calling for that. And we're going to be showing on Monday, you know, how you can fund it. So we would hope, you know, that now it's not just Government members, the Oireachtas committees can influence the budget and resource allocation, and it's a minority government as well. We would be hoping that, you know, some progress can be made towards delivering decent public services in budget 2017.
Okay, Michelle, give us that website again, and people can look
it's
up.
Socialjustice.ie.
Socialjustice.ie. Listen, always a pleasure talking to you. Have a great weekend. And
you
I hope
too.
I keep hoping every time I'm talking to you that you're going to say your work is diminished and you're nearly out of a job and everyone's...
I would hope so too.
Thank you very much, Michelle.
Have a lovely weekend.
Bye. You too. Bye. And that's, of course, Michelle Murphy, Social Policy Analyst with Social Justice Ireland. Okay, we go to a break.
This is 90.3 Near FM.